This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Anthony, here's a little thought exercise for you. What do you think it takes to be a great venture capitalist?
Okay, I would say access to lots of capital, risk tolerance, and maybe some business acumen.
Right. Okay. So fair enough. Those are qualities. The question that I'm wondering now, are those qualities only found in the private sector? And why not in government? I mean, okay, so let's take the three that you said. Tons of capital, that could be tax dollars, let's say. Risk tolerance, maybe because government doesn't have to guarantee quarterly profits to anyone, it can take risks where the private sector won't. And finally, business acumen. Except that
it can be tricky to pick winners and losers. And here's a case in point. The state of Massachusetts gave the company Evergreen Solar a package of incentives worth some $58 million. But then Evergreen abandoned its manufacturing plant in Devens. So clearly not a great investment for the state there.
Exactly. And the Evergreen Solar debacle has reinvigorated the debate over whether state government should be in the business of developing not just individual companies, but entire industries. The Patrick administration has thrown its weight behind the green tech, life sciences, and even film industry here in Massachusetts.
As we speak, Economic Development Secretary Greg Bialecki is in L.A., attempting to woo film production companies to Massachusetts by offering them a film tax credit. WBUR's Steve Brown caught up with him last week on the trip. Here's what he said.
We've really been very successful comparatively. When you talk to folks who are in the industry, they now see that of the 40-some-odd states that are offering some kind of incentives for films to be shot there, that we're really in the top handful, four or five states of the states that regularly get major motion picture production.
So proponents say these incentives and tax credits lead to jobs and help build needed industries.
But does it really work? And is this kind of targeted investment really a good deal for Massachusetts, not just in film, but in clean tech and biotech as well? Should the state be targeting particular industries? And I guess are special loans, subsidies, and industry-specific tax incentives the best way to develop the Massachusetts economy overall? Can the state government grow markets, or should that just be left to the market itself? All of that is today's talker on Radio Boston. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And with us now in the studio is Eric Nakajima. He's a senior innovation advisor to Governor Deval Patrick. Eric Nakajima, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Also with us is Jim Sturgis. He's the executive director of the Boston-based Pioneer Institute for Public Policy Research. Jim Sturgis, welcome to you.
Thanks so much. Good to be with you.
Okay, so let's just dive right into this conversation. We've mentioned Evergreen Solar, but in addition, Governor Patrick, back in 2008, launched his life sciences initiative, the $1 billion investment over 10 years in the life sciences industry here in Massachusetts. Governor Patrick has also thrown his support behind clean tech, as we've talked about. Eric Nakajima, let me just ask you, how is it that these were the specific sectors that Governor Patrick decided he really wanted to focus on?
Well, Governor Patrick didn't decide it just by himself. In the case of life sciences, the Life Sciences Collaborative, which organizes industry and policymakers and academic leaders in the life sciences sector, had gotten organized before the Patrick administration came into office. And you may remember a couple of years ago, people were talking about the fact we lacked a collaborative gene in Massachusetts and didn't partner particularly effectively and leverage our assets in the best way we could. The effort of the life sciences bill is to try to foment that kind of collaboration between academic institutions, and then also accelerate innovation and product development and discovery, particularly in areas in which the Life Sciences Collaborative said there was a real gap, the so-called Valley of Death, because in life sciences, for example, there's a long time from initial discovery of concept to commercialization and product development and approval. So there were areas in which we understood that there was a need to help accelerate and commercialization of products and develop them, as well as also support the fundamental institutional support we needed at the universities to keep the pipeline of both workforce and discoveries coming. So one answer to that question would be in life sciences, anybody looking at the Commonwealth would say that we are, in fact, a global center for life sciences R&D. And so what we want to try to do is improve commercialization and job creation in that area.
So, Jim Sturgis, why not? Why shouldn't government be a major entity in supporting those industries that are already here and do show signs for potentially extremely important growth?
I think the simple answer is that it doesn't work. And what I mean by that is if you take a look at the last 20 years, there have been not just this administration, but many previous administrations had been trying to do something very similar, picking winners and losers. And that's true if you go back to William Weld's administration and those that followed. If you take a look at Massachusetts from 2001 on, we've lost 200,000 payroll jobs. If we were honest with ourselves and actually took a look at the modern economy with modern measurement tools where we have many more sole proprietorships, the loss in terms of jobs is probably more like 250,000 jobs. We're not getting the job done. That is just very clear. Now, if you take a look at even the basic data on where job creation has occurred over the last 20 years, relocation or getting businesses to move here, which is one of the principal pillars of this sort of policy, accounts for something on the order of, at most, 2% of job growth in any one year. So it's really, if you think about the job picture as a painting on the wall, these folks are talking about the frame, and we should be talking about the picture, which is much more focused upon where our strengths are and making sure that we have a predictable environment in which investors can invest. There's much more venture capital money in the private sector than there is in the public sector, and we're not accessing that as well as we should.
So let me see if I understand you correctly. I mean, don't you think that our strengths are, as the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, in sectors like life sciences, in green tech, in these sort of in the innovation economy, which, as far as I understand, is one of the reasons why the state has been able to begin to bounce back, from the Great Recession in a better way than most of the rest of the nation?
Sure. But you're expecting, I think, and this is going back to what you started with, Meghna, in terms of what makes for a really good venture capitalist. And I think one of the things that was missing from the list was the right incentives. That is, people in the venture capital business, private sector, have a personal interest. It's their compensation. It's their reputation. It is their own money in many instances. And if they actually lose it, they are going to actually pay for it in person. Therefore, they acquire the level of expertise about every specific company that they can actually move on these investments and trust they're going to actually make some right decisions. And they will lose often. In state government, all due respect, there isn't that level of expertise, and folks are actually acting like venture capitalists with our tax dollars that could go to other things that may actually be better for us. Could we invest this in more bridges, bridge repair? Could it go into education, which is one of our calling cards in terms of attracting businesses? I don't think that the public sector has ever answered that question.
Eric Nakajima, Jim Sturgis is saying you guys just don't know what you're doing.
Well,
you don't have the smarts to pull it off.
Well, I think there are two responses to that. One, Jim was mentioning investments in education and infrastructure, and without going into detail on that, many people may know that the state is now investing more in improving roads and bridges than we have ever at any point in the history of the Commonwealth. We're also working to extend broadband infrastructure to the western part of the state to improve its competitiveness. And also, even in very, very difficult budgetary times, the governor is doing what he can to hold the line on any reduction. In fact, there's been a proposed increase in educational spending. So this isn't a matter of robbing Peter to pay Paul. The governor is, in fact, focused on the kind of investments we need to build the fundamental soundness of our economy and our productivity going forward. When it comes to investments, though, many of the programs, there isn't one program or one pot of money sitting out there that's being used by state venture capitalists or something like that. When you start digging into the details and looking at the programs we have, for example, the Small Business Matching Grant Program that the Massachusetts Life Sciences Center has only goes to companies that have received round one and round two SBIR grants, which are extraordinarily competitive and reviewed applications. So there's a review outside of anything we do. Same thing with the Accelerated Loan Program at the Life Sciences Center, where there's a lot of leverage. They have to get, in fact, in order to receive it, funds from the private sector. So the private sector has done, in those cases, its own due diligence.
So listeners, what do you make of all this? Should the state be creating incentives for particular industries? Should we be deciding which ones Massachusetts should be supporting? And for those of you who say work in the green tech or life sciences industries or even film, what are the incentives that you're looking for from the state of Massachusetts, if any, that you would need to keep your industry here and keep it growing. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jim Sturgis, let me ask you, I mean, there's a big difference between direct investment of taxpayer dollars, as we saw in part in Evergreen Solar, and coming up with, say, tax incentives, forms of, not subsidies necessarily, but tax incentives of some kind to encourage business growth in certain sectors here. Why is that not okay, like that targeted approach, rather than direct investment? Why shouldn't the state be doing this other form of investment?
I believe that tax incentives are and tax credits are actually well within reason for many of our industries because they are knowledge-based industries. So what we are arguing is they should be across the board, not choosing winners and losers, because that would be a more effective way forward. Because any company that's investing, any company that's putting R&D money on the table, which does not have a direct, it should say, immediate return on investment, is something that we want to see. The question I'd put on the table is this. Certainly, we could possibly, in clean tech, have a place where we could grow. That is a global, dynamic industry where manufacturing decisions on where to manufacture or not, where to do R&D or not, are made globally by investors all over the world. With all due respect, again, I just don't see that caliber of person or the incentives aligned within the state government. These are bureaucrats and political appointees who are smart, but just don't have that cache of expertise. Second thing I'd say is this. We're focused on those industries, but at expense of what? We've raised fees on other businesses on the order of about $500 million. That money essentially is being funneled in terms of other incentives for other industries. Now, why not focus on the financial services industries, where we have an incredible strength already, 180,000 employees in this state, and where, frankly, we are losing some of our brand. I'm not saying that's the right decision either. I'm just saying the private sector would be better off making that decision with a fair, predictable playing field that includes tax incentives for R&D and for investments.
Eric Nakajima, let me ask you. So there's this one criticism that we've heard from Jim Sturgis about just the lack of expertise. But I also wonder about government's ability to really come to grips with the cold, hard economic realities or decisions that have to come with being major players in the business field. For example, this idea that it's very attractive for a governor, for a legislator, when a company comes and says, we will create X number of jobs, right? And so that may be, the initial thing that's the most attractive thing that people hear, but the economic reality behind it is one that doesn't get the proper vetting that it should.
Well, I don't agree that it doesn't get the proper vetting that it should, but I think the key question there is, where do our public dollars go in? What do we get for it? And then if for some reason the job performance isn't forthcoming, what can we do about it? And the first thing I'd say is that for a lot of the infrastructure or grant or incentive programs that we have, what we actually do is we put money into the public infrastructure that enables the development. So, for example, in Framingham, we were improving sewage and water treatment to a research technology park in the city, which enabled Genzyme to make a significant investment and expansion there, but will also enable other companies to go in as well. So even if, and this is also in the case of Evergreen, of $13 million of the funds that's often talked about went to infrastructure improvements at Devons that'll survive that company and will help improve the competitiveness of that location or that community afterwards. In terms of what we do, if there isn't the performance that we'd like to see, one of the things that we've done in most of our programs, and I think we've done it as aggressively as we can, is ensure we have clawbacks and reporting. Recently, you might have seen a news article that Genzyme actually repaid $6 million in incentives because they were going to fail to perform. That was part of the provision of reviewing their performance on an annual basis. And if they didn't match 70% of their job creation performance in that year, we could, in fact, eliminate that tax incentive and claw it back. And we're doing that again. We've done it in a number of other programs as well.
Let's get a call in here. Tom is calling from Newton. Welcome to Radio Boston, Tom.
Thanks. How are you?
Doing well. What's your thought?
Well, I grew up in Puerto Rico in the 50s and 60s, and there was something called Operation Bootstrap there, which incentivized U.S. businesses and promoted their coming down by giving them all kinds of tax and other incentive breaks. And it is my understanding that it worked pretty well for a long time. People were able, factory workers were able to buy homes and did well compared to the rest of the Caribbean. So my thought is that past performance on the part of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is not a predictor of future successful performance.
Tom, thank you so much for your call. Let's get another one in here. Daria is calling from Jamaica Plain. Welcome to Radio Boston, Daria.
Hi.
What's your thought today?
Well, I'm wondering, I think I disagree about putting large amounts of money in any one industry. Given that we're in a time of innovation and where, you know, more than ever, we can't see what's coming, wouldn't it make more sense to invest by the state small amounts of money and spread it around more, which will spread the wealth and benefit more people and have a greater possibility of finding that great unknown, you know, the thing that's the next Google or the next Apple, rather than in what we imagine or already know is going to succeed?
Daria, thank you so much for your call. Jim Sturgis, your response to that.
I think I'd make three very brief points. First one is, and I'd go back to what Eric was saying before, I think investments in infrastructure, public investments in infrastructure, is something we don't have nearly as much of a problem with. It's the direct investment taking a place in the balance sheet of a company, which we find pretty offensive, frankly. The second thing is, if you go back to one of the fathers of venture capital in Massachusetts, Peter Brook, he has been rather critical of the administration as well. On this point, he's basically said he helped the Dukakis administration when they were doing some investment in specific IT sectors. And what he said was there was much more expertise brought to the table from the private venture capital sector. And he just doesn't see the decisions being made in that same way. And I think the venture capital, the perception amongst venture capitalists is a lot of this is somewhat political. The last thing I'd say is this, and this goes to what Daria was saying a second ago, and that is, by putting large amounts or taking a large stake in the balance sheets of very specific companies, again, we are focusing on industries that at most will deal with maybe 20, 30, 40,000 jobs, whereas the delta for us, for Massachusetts, we have lost at least 200,000 payroll jobs. We're not looking at the bigger picture. This is actually small beans.
But small beans in the short run. But when it comes to, Eric Nakajima, when it comes to building an industry, do small beans eventually, you know, amount to an entire new crop of jobs?
I think they can. I mean, for individual companies, I think that's true. We've seen terrific growth at Novartis and AstraZeneca and Shire in the life sciences sector in Massachusetts. Some of those, like Shire, have been based upon investments that the Life Sciences Center has made. I think the general observation, though, from Daria about the innovation economy and how we spur or support the creativity of individuals, I think that's dead on the mark. That's one reason why, we do work on infrastructure and broadband and things that can bring things to market better, either by roads or broadband. It's also the reason, the emphasis on education, so that there's a pipeline of really talented folks to create the next new things. Mm-hmm. It's also one of the reasons why we have brought together collaboratives in information technology, advanced manufacturing, other ways, without putting any dollars on the table particular, often very, very little, to support things like Mass Challenge, which is a business plan competition, which, again, it's about seeding, precisely the comment that Daria made, seeding many opportunities for people to bring their ideas into a competitive place, get visibility around it, and then allow the normal private marketplace to compete with them to see what the best ideas are.
We've just got a couple minutes to go, and Jim Sturgis and Eric Nakajima, I've got two kind of big questions for you, but they sort of hover over this entire conversation. Ryan Timpey, he's actually sending this to us on a tweet. He says, we should find industries that innovate and revolutionize, not ones that can be replicated abroad. And that mirrors something that was Jeff Finkel from the International Economic Development Council in D.C. He was quoted in the Globe is saying the reality is that Germany, Japan, and China are the ones picking winners and losers. So if we're going to be truly competing in this global marketplace and other nations, Jim Sturgis, are really choosing industries to be winners and losers, why shouldn't Massachusetts, you know, try to step up with equal force and aplomb?
Right. I would say that a couple things. One, China has a cost advantage. So with all the private sector money going into those sectors, they know that the public investments are going to be favorable to them. Everyone knows that China will be growing at 8% a year. We don't have that benefit, that wind at our back. In terms of Germany and Japan's success with choosing winners and losers, I would debate that it's been all that successful. The last thing I'd say is, when I was mentioning small beans a second ago, sure, we can buy all those beans to get to the 250,000 jobs we're looking for, but if you take If you buy those 250,000 beans at $124,000 a job, as we're doing with Vertex in Boston, it's about $25 billion.
Eric Nakajima, last question to you, because I was reading Mass High Tech. It's a business journal. And not long that long ago, Andrew Perlman, he's the president of Great Point Energy, he was quoted, he had like five different suggestions that he had for Massachusetts in terms of things to do to get more clean tech and green tech to come to Massachusetts. And interestingly, only two of them really had to do with investment, and the other three had to do with, say, going to Washington to lobby, quite frankly, for more support from the federal government, catching the attention of serial entrepreneurs to lure them here and keep them here in Massachusetts. So what is it that that state government can do, or maybe isn't doing enough in these sort of non-direct investment things that will truly have a long-term effect in growing industry here?
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, because that we actually have been very aggressive in increasing federal funding for National Institutes of Health and things like that. And we know that if the U.S. Department of Energy or NIH and others are investing in research and development and in innovation, we'll grab a disproportionate share of that. Historically, we always have. And when it comes to attracting people here, we believe we make investments in quality of life and trying to bring down the cost of housing and our availability of housing and sell the Commonwealth.
Well, that's Eric Nakajima. He is the Senior Innovation Advisor to Governor Deval Patrick. Thank you so much for joining us. And Jim Sturgis, Executive Director of the Boston-based Pioneer Institute for Public Policy Research. Thank you so much for coming on Radio
Boston.
Thank you very much. Listeners, stay with us, because coming up after the break, red velvet cake, that sweet crimson batter. You know you love it, but do you love it enough to deep fry a chicken in it? We'll see, because Anthony's going to give it a try. I'm Meghna Chakravarti with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.